for my dog, we've been doing, I took her to obedience class. We passed all five classes and then we started doing agility a couple weeks ago. And it's just the foundation class to like get her to learn like, you know, which way to turn and how to go in the tunnel and easy stuff. But I've been going through a lot of dog treats and I realized I can give my dog cat treats and the cat treats are like the perfect size for like
tiny little rewards.
And so what did I do? I bought cat treats in mass.
There you go.
And they're actually, they're so perfect size and I love them. So that's been kind of my latest hyperfixation and my plants are all getting watered like half a week late because I'm like, I have to go train my dog. But I did, I was telling Christine, I did get the, I got an MSU fertilizer because I've been, the fertilizer I like to use, they stopped making it. And then the stuff I switched to was the Dynagrow Foliage Pro and then Super Thrive bought it. And I'm like, I don't know if they're going to change this formula. I don't know how I feel about this. So I was going to try out the MSU fertilizer that all the Hoya and Orchid people talk about and used it today.
Perfect.
I will let you know what happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to Rough Around the Hedges podcast. I'm Kaylin.
I'm Christine.
And today we have Daryl Chang joining us again. Say
hello.
Hi. Hey, Daryl.
Hi, everyone.
So today we are going to be discussing Daryl's like framework for diagnosing houseplant problems. Mm-hmm. So on his blog website, he actually has a Google Docs survey you can fill out if you need help. And then he will look at your problem. And actually, we should just let him talk about this. But we'll also go over like, you know, how you can do this on your own and what to look for and kind of almost like the order of operations for figuring out what could be wrong. So Daryl, take it away.
Sure. So yes, as you were mentioning on house, so the web address is houseplantjournal.com/help. Pretty simple. Basically, I used some kind of survey software to help me put together essentially like the questions and data that I need to collect that I think would be with the best way to help someone with their plant problems. Because, you know, let's go right back to the beginning of all this, right? You say, you know, the usual way of addressing houseplant problems is first you have to see that there's a problem. So you see a yellowed leaf, you see some brown tips, or you're just maybe generally not happy with how your plant is doing. And then you ask somebody who maybe has the same plant and they're doing well with it, and you say, like, what's wrong with it? I think a lot of times I would outright call it a misconception that you can look at a singular blemish and say it is because of this and therefore you should change that.
Right. There is right? not a, like the 100% answer.
Does not exist.
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't exist because the blemish itself has a whole host of reasons why it might be showing up, you know, on your plant. Mm-hmm. Right. And so instead of like, which is so now, but yet I feel like people are fixated on if this, then that, if something else, then maybe something else. There this idea that we really want to be able to just diagnose a plant by looking at it and then saying what's wrong. Right. You know, I think even when you go to the doctor, they don't even do that, right? You can't just cough and like, and then the doctor, and you say, what's wrong with me? Doctor says, oh, you have a cold virus. Well, what if it's a flu? What if it's something else? What if it's tuberculosis? Like, it's a whole bunch of things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and so the doctor would therefore have to ask you questions, right? More questions to probe and kind of rule out certain things. So I felt like we needed that idea, we needed that level of sophistication in how we address plant problems, right? And I mean, right off the bat, we do know that, at least I always say that. And so at some point, your oldest leaves will turn yellow, right? And that's nothing to be concerned about. So if therefore one of the options of a yellowed leaf is nothing to worry about, then we have to be able to get to that conclusion and rule out other things that you might be doing, right? So you know, this is kind of a, you know, maybe an older reference, but maybe you would know too. If you ever watched Seinfeld, there's one episode where Kramer's phone number is very close to the movie phone where people are asking about like what movies are playing and what here, what there, right? And then, you know, he's trying to pretend to be an automated movie thing because he's just playing along, right? People asking him where the which was playing what movie, and he says, press one for blah, blah, blah. And he hears the tone. Obviously, he has no idea what the tone is. And he says, why don't you just tell me the name of the movie you want to see? Right? And the point is that I thought of that when I thought about plant care in the sense of diagnosing yellow leaves and saying, how can you say if it's overwatering or underwatering? Why don't you just tell me how you water the plant? How can you tell if it's too little light or too much light? Why don't you just show me the light that you get, right? So it's like, instead of looking at the plant to tell you if there's something wrong, I'm diagnosing directly your other factors that influence growth.
I like that because people aren't gonna, they're like, they'll be like, oh, it's getting tons of light, but like, they're probably not measuring it.
Not measuring, or
they're probably just using their eyeballs, which are lying to them.
Yeah. So yeah. Why don't we go through like that list of questions? Because I think like basically as you were saying, as we were talking about earlier, when people post, you know, a plant problem they have on Facebook, they'll fail to provide a whole host of information that would be pertinent to actually helping to being able to say something that would actually help them.
Right.
Because telling someone that you're overwatering the plant, actually may not help them, because all they'll think to do is just water the plant less, and that may not change the situation at all. So, first question, although it may seem obvious, I use all these questions. There's always like a little bit of a test in here, right? And so the first question is, what kind of plant do you need help with? If they can't even tell me the name of the plant, then I already kind of can gauge, right? Don't know that much, or quite a beginner, which is fine, but it's just for me to gauge sort of like your level of experience with the plant, right? And then of course, more directly, the second question is, how long have you owned and cared for the plant?
Good. So I was going to say that needs to be like one of the first questions.
I just got it.
And so I also make the answering of it pretty simple. Like it's multiple choice, picking, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like less than 6 months, 6 months to a year, 1 to 2 years, 2 years to three or more, right? Uh-huh. And I would say that right off the bat, like 90% of the questions I'm getting that are in the range of less than 6 months are the people who are just dealing with like, that the plant is just adjusting to their space and they don't like what it looks like.
Yeah, normal temper tantrums, yeah.
Right. However, I am very pleased to sometimes see like, you know, a 3+ years Monstera. Then I right away know that, okay, if they've had this plant for 3 years, and of course I'm also asking for photos, right? So you show me a photo of the overall plant, and then I ask also like, show me what you're concerned about, right? So those are the first two photos that I get. And so like, earlier I was saying, if you have a Monstera for over 3 years, I can see right from the photo whether it's been struggling for 3 years or whether it's been doing quite well for 3 years.
Right.
All right. And then the next part is describe the problem and when does it start happening? All right. So this is just very quickly, qualitatively, like, what is it that you're concerned about? Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, some people will be very like writing a very short two sentences, and others give you a whole paragraph, right? So whatever the case may be, any information is helpful. All right. So then the next couple of questions are about watering, and there's a bit of a split, like a, if this, then it goes to a different set of questions. But the question is not just how often you water. It's the first question is, what is your thought process on watering? And the two choices are, I wait for the soil to dry to an X degree, which I'll later ask about that. And the second question, or the second response is, I follow the schedule I was told or researched for this plant.
Good.
And
good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can see where I'm going here, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's some people who, because I'm trying to essentially maybe make a dichotomy here of people who believe that, you know, watering is just a strict schedule that's intrinsic to the plant, versus it's an act of observing the soil dryness and then responding to that soil dryness.
Right.
And then of course, okay. So then the secondary question to if you answer it by saying I follow the schedule, then I ask, well, then what frequency were you told, right? And then once a week, once every 2 weeks, whatever, doesn't matter, right? Okay, then the next question is describe how you water. And so the first part about like, the first part is trying to assess, do you understand when you should water? And then this next question about describe how you water is, now tell me exactly like, what are you exactly doing when you quote unquote water the plant, right? Because I just don't want to assume that the method that you're doing is good or not good, right? And so the three responses that are related to how you described water, again, this is a multiple choice answer. The first one is fully soak the soil, letting excess drain away. Pour a small amount of water into the soil, or bottom watering. Mm. So those three, I would call it, are the three broadest categories of how you could potentially water. And I let the people, like it's a multiple select. So if they okay. do it multiple ways, they can choose several ways, right?
Because I was just going to ask, like, I do A and C.
So, yeah. So exactly. So
like
then
a
you
combo
would probably
of the two. Yeah.
Exactly. You would probably choose both of those, mm-hmm. right? And I would choose A and B because I sometimes just pour a small amount, but other times I'll take it to the sink and give it a thorough soaking. Yeah. Okay. So that is about watering. I ask, what city do you live in? Mm. Because now we're getting into the light part, right? And then, okay, the light part now, if your listeners can go back and listen to the episode we talked about light, then they'll understand the reason why I'm asking these types of questions for light. So the first question being, on a clear day, approximately how many hours of direct sun shines on the plant? And the answers are zero, only indirect light hits the plant, one, two, three, or more. So that already should tell you that I don't care what the direction of the window is, and it doesn't matter what the obstructions are outside or how big your window is. Mm-hmm. Like, you just need to be kind of like explicitly observing your plant. Like, how, like, is the sun ever hitting the plant? And so a lot of times right from this question, if I see zero, only indirect light, and then the next question is show, like, you know, to upload a picture, show me the overall space where the plant lives. From these two, like from that question and from looking at the picture, that's where I'll easily diagnose if it's too far from the window. Mm. And that's sort of where a lot of times if I see it's only, like the person says it's only indirect light and I look at the picture and it's, you know, 10 feet from the window, then usually that's the first issue is the light.
When people send you, when they fill out the survey, what percentage would you say people aren't giving their plant enough light?
I would say it's like, it's close to 50%.
It's not horrible.
It's not horrible.
I was going to say kind of in tandem with that though, like you're saying, if they're putting 0 to 3 hours, or I can't remember what that first option was. And also are saying they're like soaking their plant every week. Like that's usually pretty big red flags, at least for me. That's what I would say.
You know, the funny thing is too, that, you know, I have about 1,000 responses here over past several years that I've been having this survey thing open.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't seen many examples of
that,
the classical overwatering.
Oh, wow.
Right. Which is where they say, oh, I'm watering it once a week. And then the plant is far from the window. And well, I mean, it's not like, it's not as often as you would think. Like sure. It's more that they're noticing just the very first slightest problem on the plant. Mm-hmm. And they would still say, for example, they're waiting for the soil to dry, but the plant is still too far from the window.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And then, of course, other times it's the soil issue, which is that, and then, of course, later on in the survey, I also do ask about show me the soil. You know, if I do see let's say a Monstera yellowing, like most of the leaves turning yellow, but then I also, when I see the soil, it's like, you know, all very dense, all dark, no perlite, no bark chips at all. Then that's also another one where it's really the roots are being suffocated by the poor soil, not because of just quote unquote overwatering.
Right.
Yeah.
That just reminded me of in my local Hoya group, someone was asking about why their plant was declining. They said it was a Hoya pollinera that they were watering every 4 days and it was just dirt, like just black soil. There was no amendments in there. And I was like, that's your problem.
Yeah.
Stop watering it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like all of these things. I mean, I haven't really quite mapped it out for myself yet, but like in my mind, it's fully mapped out, which is that, you know, light, watering, soil, all three of those need to be, you know, in the right, at the right settings, so to speak.
Yeah,
right.
Venn diagram.
So there are times where I get like a very dehydrated looking Monstera, and then I look at the soil and it's like really, really, really super chunky. Mm-hmm. And then in their response about watering, they're also saying, I wait till the soil is completely dry. Oof. So it's like, because I have those pieces of information, then right away I can tell them, well, number one, you either need to increase the frequency of your watering, or better yet would be to add a bit of, you know, something more water retaining in that mix, because sometimes if it's too chunky, you're just making it harder on yourself to figure out, to keep up with watering.
Mm-hmm. Daryl, side note, mm-hmm. what kind of substrate do you like to use? And then also, how dry do you let your stuff get before you water?
So I typically have like your standard bag of potting soil, which consists of cocoa peat or regular peat moss with a bit of perlite. So that's the little white bits. Mm-hmm. So I keep that as one component, and then I just have a bag of orchid bark or any kind of bark chips that I will add to that, you know, regular soil every time I go and make a new pot of potting soil.
Nice.
And so depending on what plant it is, I will make the mix of like two parts potting soil to one part bark, or if it's really chunky, then it'll be one part potting soil to one part bark. And then in terms of letting it dry, so I always say that there's only three different dryness levels that I should be cycling for, like between wet and dry. So the first type is your cacti and succulents, where you let them go completely dry. So that's literally where it's like dry right to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then the middle type, which is most tropical foliage, is water when it's partially dry. So anywhere down to halfway can still be moist, and then you water again. And of course, I'm not like calculating a certain time frame. It's just based on observing all the plants, right? And of course, obviously, with a bigger pot, a smaller pot, all that will change how quickly it dries out, how slowly. And so then, you know, I sometimes when I talk about this method of watering, I show a picture of me sitting in front of my old apartment with like hundreds of plants on like different shelves. And then I tell people, like some people ask me, how do I keep track of watering? And I say, there's nothing to keep track of, because when you're doing it by observation, then you just know when to water each different type of plant. And again, it may seem like intimidating. Oh, each type of plant, there's hundreds of types. Like, no. There's only three types of watering in terms of the way that each plant wants to be cycled through their wet and dry. Mm-hmm. And then just the last example is of the type of watering is the maidenhair fern is the only example I can think of where you always have to keep the soil moist.
Wet all the time. Yeah.
Wet all the time. Yes.
but there are very few plants that want that category.
Yeah, exactly. Very few of your typical houseplants.
Right.
Minus maidenhair fern.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the ones that I keep mostly wet, and Begonia rex is one of them.
It is, yeah.
Also
a heart fern is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't grow any ferns, but yeah, most of those you want to keep pretty moist.
Right.
Sometimes my calatheas I'll keep moist, and same with alocasia, but like they can get a little dry.
Sure.
They're not like wet plants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And nowhere near the maidenhair moisture level, right?
Exactly. Okay, so where were we? Oh, yeah, in the diagnostic, we were talking about light. So if you recall from the earlier talk we had about natural, like the parameters for natural light that describe like an indoor light situation, there's the two parameters being number of hours of direct sun and then the strength of the indirect light. Now, I don't expect people to have a light meter, which is why I don't ask them to give me the strength of their indirect light. I just look at the picture and I can know if it's, you know, looking at a picture and looking at a size of a window and such, like I already know if it's like, you know, less than 100 foot candles or if it's going to be 400 foot candles or more, that kind of thing.
Do you, in the picture, do you ask for a specific time of day, like take a picture when the sun is hitting the, you know, quote unquote, when you think the sun's hitting the plant, or do you just
whenever. So I have received like photos at night.
Okay.
but really all I care about is
relation to distance,
the size of the window. Yeah. Distance to the window. And most of the time it's quite obvious that it's either, like what I'm saying is I'm not trying to distinguish between, you know, 100 foot candles to 150 to 200. I don't care about that. Most of the time, I just look at a picture and tell you if it's going to be less than 100 or more than 100, and generally fine, right? Okay. So, that's the part about for natural light. And of course, if they use grow lights, then I also ask about like, show me the grow light setup. I'll ask for a picture, and then if they say yes, they use grow lights, then I'll ask them how long do they keep it on for the day, and I'll also even ask like if they can tell me the name or model of the grow light, just because then I don't have to, you know, trying to strain looking at the grow light picture and estimating the strength.
Sure.
Okay. So that was all about light. And then this part for fertilizer, I say, what fertilizer, if any, do you use? And the choices are like, I've never used fertilizer, or I've always used fertilizer and then I asked for the name. Or I just recently started using fertilizer. Mm-hmm. And like, the other 50%, like the other a good portion of the plant problems that I see are if the person has owned the plant for usually longer than 6 months. So the response is between 6 months to a year or 1 year or more. And if this fertilizer response is no, I have never used fertilizer, then that's the problem, which is that you cannot have a plant growing in a container, consuming nutrients and just never replenishing it. Right. And the very obvious, symptom of that is that your lower leaves are dying well before you're getting any new growth coming out. And mm-hmm. so eventually your plant just thins out.
I had some plants at my work studio and I didn't bother to fertilize them because it was just an extra step of having to water my plants at work.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, they were living really close to 8 foot tall west facing windows, and I know that they weren't quite as lush as the stuff at home that I was fertilizing, but like they didn't do too bad.
So,
but they were all getting enough light. So, right.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing that I would say in terms of like how a system works, that at least in my mind of how a plant works, is that I look at the amount of nitrogen and other nutrients in a pot as being just like limited, right? So if there's enough light for the plant to put out new leaves, then it will grow the maximum number that it can grow to and be supported by, you know, X number of nitrogen atoms in the, you know, not nitrogen atoms, but you know what I mean? Like nitrogen right. in the soil. So, but once you go plus one, like one more leaf, then the lower leaf at the bottom has to go, right? And then of course, now there's the issue of plant to plant. A plant losing its lower leaves looks different on different plants, right? Like a money tree, if you have plants or like leaves dropping off the bottom, doesn't look too bad because the overall thing is supposed to be the tree-like,
right?
But if you have a single vine monstera with only six leaves and you start to lose the fifth one, or the bottom one, the sixth one, then it's much more obvious and would seem to be much more concerning, right?
Especially if your leaves aren't sizing up.
Exactly. So part of the reason why this survey I feel like is really kind of giving me lots of insight is that, you know, people are more concerned with certain plants just because they value certain, like the leaves, more than others, mm-hmm. right? And that is to say also as a bigger picture thing with this survey is that I have very rarely ever received any questions about a plant who has from a person who has exceptionally large windows. Like I've almost never seen it. And that is to say that this is a survey that kind of filters the people that are like, okay, these are all the people who are clearly concerned about something about their plant.
Right.
And are concerned or unhappy, right? So if we take the opposite, which is, well, how are people going to be always happy with their plants? Well, unfortunately, that's just because if you have exceptionally large windows, then your plants just grow better. Mm-hmm. Almost regardless of what you do, as long as you remember to water.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's almost, they're so easy that way. Because I have some big windows. I don't have like the biggest windows, but I do have some decent south-facing windows. So it's like, they take care of themselves.
Well, and you've gone the next step of putting in windows for your plants.
Yeah, the house that my partner and I bought, it had two walls in the main floor, the dining room and the living room, just walls facing south, unobstructed. My partner frames houses for a living. So I was like, hey, if we buy this house, can we put two windows in here? And he was like, yes. And so that was the first thing we did. It took a couple months.
Sort of the dream, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. I'll have to send you some pictures because it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see it. I would love to see it. And likewise, although I'm not married to anyone who can do this for me, but like when we moved into our current house, I realized, oh, I'm in a bungalow. That means I can put a skylight anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then let me just sort of see if we're almost done with the... And then the last two items on the questionnaire are like, send me a picture of the soil. And lastly... is like, have you ever repotted the plant? And the secondary question of that is like, when was the last time you repotted it?
Gotcha. Yeah, I was going to say a good question would be, have you done anything different to the plant recently, i.e. repotted, mm-hmm. Changed where its location is, like all of that stuff. Mm-hmm.
I would say what you just mentioned there is probably not captured quite as well, like in terms of change, although people sure. tend to write about it in the, this, when I say describe,
sure.
you know, what the problem is and when it started happening. And then that's kind of when maybe what cues them to say like, oh, I moved houses, blah, blah, blah. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But you're right. Changes to the environment will definitely have an impact on what you see in your plant.
I really want to point out, I really appreciate that you don't ask about humidity.
We haven't got to that one yet.
No. I think that's one of the secondary parts. That's just, it's more of a, like a sort of after the watering questions, then it says, I'm sorry, the text is so small on my screen, but okay, anyway, good. It says, to finish this section, is there anything else you want to tell me about how you water? Although I do imply water, but people usually mention about humidity somewhere in there. Like this, one of the responses I see right already on my screen is, I spray it with water for humidity.
There you go. That's, yeah, we haven't done a humidity episode yet, but
have Kayla, we not?
Not yet. Kayla and I are both very firm advocates that is not a make or break for 98% of houseplants.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll always see when you Google stuff, everything says keep at 50% or above. Or when, yes, that helps plants, but that's not going to be the reason why.
And it's not make or break.
It's not going to be the reason why your Monstera deliciosa is dying.
No.
Yes. And not only that, but when you said, you know, the advice will say keep above 50%, you'd be lucky if they even tell you a percentage.
Right.
Because most of the time they're just broad strokes saying like,
missed it. Yeah.
it likes humidity.
Sure.
Right. And I think... one of the main problems with the idea of like, oh, the plant, think about the environment of the plant. Most people's, 99% of people think about environment, they think about humidity, right? When they really should be thinking about the subtleties of light.
Mm-hmm. How many, I guess, either like on a daily or weekly basis, how many submissions do you get usually with this?
So basically anytime someone DMs me on Instagram, for example, mm-hmm. with a question, then I'll just immediately respond, oh, you know, please fill out this, you know, this survey. I'll send them here. Right.
Sure.
And then like, I don't know how many people start the answer and then maybe they get tired of it and don't finish it.
Well, once they get to the light question, they probably are like, oh no,
this is too much like school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, But I'm here. But here's the thing: is like I feel like it would be a disservice to you if I just told you, it could be overwatering or use fertilizer, right?
Yeah.
And just left it at that. Whereas when I have your full, you know, answers, then I can actually tell you something useful, right? And in fact, most of the time what I do is if there's a question that I feel like has a good assortment of photos, right? And then also maybe that it keys in on an example of, okay, you know, your watering technique, this is, you know, you said on a schedule and that's probably why it was not doing so well, or you said you never use fertilizer and this is a clear example of what happens when you don't use fertilizer. So whenever there's a good lesson learned kind of thing from any of these examples, then I will publish them on my website in the houseplant Q&A section. Mm-hmm. And so I even had my web designer specifically make it so that these posts look almost like, you know, a chat, right? So like it'll say, you know, the plant parent is writing to me and showing me this picture. And then when I respond, it's a different chat with, like it's a different chat bubble saying like that it's, I'm the one responding to it, right?
Sure.
And what I usually do in terms of how I respond is most of the time I will try and break it up into the three categories of what I consider to be like the three components of enjoying your plants. Number one being the environment. So that's where I'll discuss about light. The second part being effort. That's where I talk about all the things that you are doing for the plant. And then the last section is probably the most important, is the expectations. And so this is where I'll say, you know, if your Monstera has the lower leaf yellowing, and I'll usually say, well, you know what? I'm looking at your overall plant. It looks generally okay. So this lowest leaf yellowing turning yellow, you don't need to be concerned about, mm-hmm. right? Or some other times it'll be, I don't know. You know, some brown tips here and there. I'll say, well, you know what? You leaves have a limited lifespan that you shouldn't expect them to last forever. Just clip off the parts that you don't find, that you find ugly. And given good light, your plant will keep growing new leaves, right? So I kind of set the expectation for what's the future that you can expect for the plant. And that part, I think, is what's really lacking in how people help others with plant care, which is that they're not really setting the expectations. They just tell them like what they should do, mm-hmm. but there's no expectation about, okay, well, what's going to happen? Is the brown tip going to disappear? No, it's actually never going to disappear. Right. But so I try to be more explicit and say that.
Yeah. I like that you do that because there's not a lot of people out there who say that, it's a question everybody has when they start off with plants.
And not everyone always realizes that once the damage is there, it's not going to go away.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and that's why I think if no one says what to expect with it, mm-hmm. then people are just going to keep believing that, oh, I'm causing this, something I'm doing has caused this, and they'll blame themselves and then lose interest in the plant.
Mm-hmm. Instead, you just got to look forward to making all the new leaves come out nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And whenever I say that, then the next question is, well, how do you make new leaves come out? The foundation is light.
Yeah.
The foundation is light. It's yep. not watering special. It's not watering with unicorn tears. It's light.
Speaking of unicorn tears, I got a RODI thing for $5 last weekend.
Okay, well, reverse osmosis water is unicorn tears.
Yeah. Shit. Christine and I actually, we participated in the Orchid Society Minnesota?
Yeah.
We went to their monthly meeting to see what it's like. We have a couple friends who are members, and they had a silent auction. So we bid on some orchids, and nobody wanted the RODI thing. So I was like, well, for $5, I got it. I took it home. And I got to figure out how to hook it up and stuff, but I didn't need it. But I was like, for $5, I can take this.
Right.
Knowing that they're like $250 brand new.
Right.
Oh, you mean you got the whole like system?
Yeah. Yeah. She got the whole thing.
Wow. $5.
Everyone was bidding on the orchids. No one wanted the growing setup stuff.
Yeah, and there were a couple grow lights there. People bid those up to retail value, but nobody wanted the space heater and the RODI system.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting with grow lights too. It's that, let's say 20 years ago when grow lights were like much more specialized. They were also much more specialized because you were trying to, like, you know, let's be real here, grow tomatoes in your basement, right? But the lights that are necessary for growing most of our houseplants, you don't need nearly that much power. Mm-hmm. And also our technology for making white LED lights has come so far that, you know, as long as you're measuring it to know how much is reaching your plant, then you can basically take almost any white LED light and use that as a grow light.
I like that. I like that that's a thing we can do.
Right.
Because I went and got $13 shop lights from the home improvement store for my vegetable seed starting purposes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And same with, yeah. And for seed starting, the seed starting light requirements is far less than the growing a vegetable in its mature, like to get it to fruiting stage, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, outdoors, right? So yeah, you totally can. And the funny thing too is that, again, as I was saying, 20 years ago, the shop lights would have been fluorescent lights, and fluorescent lights, the spectrum is completely different than white LED.
Yep. Going back to your survey, have you, I guess, two-part question. Have you come across any submissions that you are like, there's nothing wrong with your plant?
You're overreacting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there have been, like, I think, I mean, thankfully, Monstera is a very popular plant that I also like to talk about, mm-hmm, because I have a lot of submissions on Monsteras. And so quite often, yes, I would say that a lot of times Monsteras, it's the lowest leaf that starts to turn yellow and people get concerned and then they reach out to me. So what I will say to them usually is that there's nothing wrong with your plant. This is completely normal. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, when I read like their other things that they submit to me, then I might be able to help them with, okay, well, but you know, I would suggest to put it closer to the window, for example, mm-hmm, right? So that is to say that, like, if I was to just say to them, put it closer to your window, they might believe that if they put it closer to the window that they'll never get a yellow leaf again. But right, that's not the case, right? So I still need to make that distinction so that they can know that the lowest leaf turning yellow is a normal thing that happens. However, the rate at which that happens can be slowed by, number one, having more light, because that pushes new growth to come out sooner, mm-hmm, which you will then be, like, this is a psychological thing, which is then you will be less concerned about older leaves yellowing because you have so many nice new leaves after, like, you know, that have come after. And then, of course, the other part, which is if you fertilize adequately, then the plant will tend to hold on to the leaf for as long as possible, which, again, is still not forever.
I've been pretty impressed with some of my plants, like the big ones, how long we hold on to leaves for.
Sure.
Like, namely, my Tycon and my Regal Shield, which, mm-hmm, are the two biggest plants in my biggest south-facing window. I think I'm back up to 17 leaves on my Regal Shield. Nice. But not as big, though.
Right.
Anyway.
So I'm curious about the Thai constellation, because for me, I have a Tycon and also a regular Monstera. And because I've done so many time lapses and leaf yellowing document, like, you know, thank you for photosynthesis documentations, then I can actually, like, match up my photos with when they were born versus when they died.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And I really like that you do that.
Like, The shortest one, which had me concerned, was, like, I think just, like, you know, 1 year and, you know, 9 months kind of thing was the shortest I've ever seen on my Monstera.
Oh, wow.
But the usual time is between 2 and 3 years.
That would, I guess, kind of line up with mine, because I got mine as a one leaf cutting.
Your Tycon?
Yep. Just about 2 years ago. And I just, mm-hmm, lost that leaf on my plant.
Mm. Yeah.
And of course, I, like, kind of freaked out because I was like, oh no, it finally died. but I mean, yeah, it's also putting out. I'm at my current one's currently at almost 30 inches.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Mine's 30. My biggest one's 32 right now.
Nice.
For my Tycon, I got it as a three leaf top cutting for my friend Tom. We did a trade for Albo for Ty. And was that would have been in 21. Do you remember, Christine, did I get it in the summer or in the fall?
Summer.
So let's just assume that was 21. It's now
25,
and I've only lost one leaf on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it came to me with three leaves, and then I grew all the other ones. So that means, I don't know when those original three leaves grew, because they were in Tom's care at that point. But right. Yeah, my leaves would be going on 4 years.
21 or 22?
Well, we moved into the house in 21.
Okay.
Maybe it was 22.
I think, yeah, you didn't have it right away.
So. Well, that would still be 3 years. Yeah. Crazy. I could probably go back and scroll through my plant photos and find it.
Yeah, isn't that great that we can take so many photos, like just document anything that we want. Mm-hmm. And documenting plants is definitely one of those things that I think is a newer phenomenon, obviously, because we have phones. Because mm-hmm. think about, you know, in the days of early digital photography, you wouldn't just take pictures of everything that you had, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we have this ability to document things much easier, which therefore I believe should then change the way we diagnose plant problems.
Sure.
It's funny, my phone is, I'm out of space on my phone, and it's because I have so many plant pictures. So I have to keep like
taking uploading stuff.
Yeah, I have to hook my phone up to the computer and download the pictures and then delete them off my phone. And then the phone's still like, you don't have enough room. I'm like, I just got rid of 5,000 plant photos. What do you want from me?
Going back, part two, my question was, have you ever been like truly stumped by anyone's submissions?
Yeah, actually there was one that it was a peace lily.
Oh, well, there's the problem right there.
Christine doesn't like peace lilies. You know what?
People have all these things about peace, like against peace lilies, but actually peace lily for me is one of my oldest plants that I got over 10 years ago. One of my very first plants, and it like started out small, very small, like 6-inch IKEA pot. And now it's in a 12-inch gigantic, like it's huge.
Nice.
And it's like one of the plants that I've kept over so long. I kept it through thrips. I kept it through scale. And yeah, it's been such a trooper for me in terms of plants. But anyway, the problem that stumped me, which I ended up actually posting on Instagram about asking people, was that the person had the, you know, the white inflorescence, the flower, mm-hmm. had all these, it was almost as if all the veins inside were like turning really like high contrast brown. Like you could see the brown right through the white, and it was making like all, like, it was almost like a mosaic look. Mm. Right. And I just had no idea what it was. So I just posted that picture on Instagram and asked people like, what do you think this is?
Yeah. Did you get
it? I don't quite remember what responses I got.
Gotcha.
But you know, first of all, when I think about flowers, usually my attitude towards flowers is, well, they're not going to last. Like they're not even the main part of the plant, which lasts forever. So I don't really care that much. Mm-hmm. Because for peace lily, like the leaves is what keeps the whole plant going. Right. Yeah.
I just pulled up your Instagram page to look at it. That is weird.
Wow.
Oh, you found it.
I did. Yeah.
It was a little while back. It was like almost a year ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right about. Weird. Everyone's saying mosaic. I almost wonder if like it was like a mineral deposit in the water.
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes me think about, you know, those weird blue orchids with like, clearly they've like dyed
the
them
dye
somehow.
In them. Yeah, it's pulling up something. Yeah.
Exactly. That's my thought about that.
Interesting.
Huh. That is cool.
I mean, it's cool looking, but yeah, hopefully it didn't completely.
Well, yeah. So my, I mean, my long term
happy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like I look at the leaves and they look fine, and I check out their light situation, look fine. So my suggestion was like, cut off this flower and then see what the next one looks like.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's fun when my inflorescences die, because they just, like, every day they just look sadder and sadder till they fall off.
Yeah. We're not flower people here. We're very much foliage people.
For sure. I just, there's no, like, for me, there's no sense in cutting it off because the plant's just going to grow more.
Another one. Yeah.
So my thing with inflorescences is just leave them till they start looking bothersome, and then I'll either pull them off, cut them off, or just wait till they brown and die. Mm-hmm. Daryl, fun fact, I have a philodendron moonlight that's been blooming nonstop for 2 years straight.
You mean like the same bloom is still open?
No. Every time it grows a new leaf, it puts out two inflorescences.
Oh, wow. I see.
And it hasn't stopped. Huh. It's crazy. I figured it would have like a season, but it just keeps going.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this idea like that sometimes like, oh, if a plant puts out a flower, it means that it's going to die soon or something like that.
Yeah. Right?
Now, I mean, there are certain plants that their life cycle is to put out the flower and then the mother plant dies, mm-hmm. right? Like a bromeliad or a tillandsia. But then I have wondered about philodendrons and like aroids, whether it's like there's some kind of life cycle trigger that gets them to put out the flower, which is exactly what made me think about when you said your philodendrons been putting out inflorescence every other leaf. It's almost like saying, are we going to mate now? Are we going to mate now? What about now?
I kind of just figured it was that once they reach a certain maturity point, then they'll bloom. And I have some that do it like at a specific time throughout the year. And then like my moonlight just, it's never stopped. And right. You can go back and look at all the leaves. They have that little like split in their petiole where the inflows come from. Like it's every single leaf down to like whenever it had started or whatever. And it's a giant bush. It's like 3 feet tall. But like other ones, like, let's see, my glad hands only blooms like twice a year.
Those vining ones are harder to bloom.
My ring of fire just refuses to grow leaves and it just grows inflorescences. That one's a goofball.
Oh, interesting.
But most everyone else, though, like my Rojo Congo puts out an inflorescence maybe every 3 months, but it doesn't like keep doing it. Right. I don't know. I should write this down and keep track of it because yeah, the moonlight's the only one that's been consistent. Everyone else is like, here's one. Okay, I'm done. Okay, here's another one. I'm done.
I had a friend who asked me, he said, hey, how do I get my Monstera Thai constellation to bloom indoors? And I said,
how would you want that?
Oh, it's very hard to get any Monstera to create a bloom indoors because it requires a lot of light and a lot of heat. Like it has to be hot, right? Mm. I mean, relative to room temperature. And so, I mean, off he went and tried. He put like tons of grow lights around it. And he messaged me like a year later and he showed me his Thai con has a flower.
Nice.
Cool.
Did he manage to get it to fruit?
I think that process is still going on right now.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah, it takes almost like another year before the fruit comes out from a flower, gotcha. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of our local greenhouses has a Taikon as their mascot. And last fall I was there and they had fruit on it. And I was very tempted to be like...
Oh, it was Tonkadale.
Yeah.
You've been there.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Tonkadale. Yeah. Okay, good.
I was very tempted to be like, hey, are you going to do anything with that? Or like, can I take it? Like... I'm really determined to try Monstera fruit at some point in my life.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah.
Mm, yes, yes. I'm pretty sure if we traveled somewhere into the tropics in Asia or something like that, they'd have tons.
Yeah.
I have a question about fungus. Mm. How often are the plant problems people submit fungus related? Or is that just like a side thing that you notice affecting the plant that's not, I guess the main problem they're concerned about?
Fungus as in like
a rust fungus or
I don't think I've ever seen like a rust fungus question submitted to me. I know what it looks like because you know it might have been at Tonkadale when I was at the back with their staff and the guy showed me like a Thai constellation with rust fungus on it.
Mm-hmm. And we do have
we're treating with copper fungicide and you know that's why it's isolated back here. But through the submissions, no, I've very rarely have ever seen, like a fungal problem. However, I have seen, you know, when the Monstera gets like, you know, dark patches with little yellow rings around it, that's typically from like very moist soil that stays moist for a long time, which, you know, I've almost resolved to just never say it's overwatering. And I always just say, moist for a long time, you know, without having much light.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the philodendrons that I brought home will have the yellow spot with the brown ring around it. And I've gotten rid of those on subsequent leaves by using the copper fungicide. And then it's great because once it goes away, it stays away.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I don't like bottom water and then share the water with other plants. But then I've also...
Are you talking about like a philodendron micans typically gets a lot of these little dots on them or...
Are those the extra floral nectaries on the micans or... Because like I'm thinking more like on a black cardinal, ring of fire, Rojo Congo, those types. But then also I've used the copper fungicide to...
Help keep your white.
Yeah, to keep the white on my elbow. And I actually just... I've been treating my Alocasia frydeck. The variegated one to prevent the leaves from browning quicker, especially in the white parts. And it's been successful. My elbow is, dare I say, flawless.
Yeah.
With the exception of that one leaf I damaged in transit when I took it to our Minnesota State Fair has a houseplant show where you can bring your houseplants in and then they judge them and your plants win ribbons. So I've done that the last couple years and last August, I took my 5, 6, 8. It was 8 feet tall, Monstera elbow. I laid it down in my car, took it to the state fair, And then I got second place to my other Calathea orbifolia.
Oh.
That was really funny. Anyway.
Yeah, I think we have something similar too at our fair. Yeah. And one year I took a Sansevieria and an aloe. The Sansevieria won second place. Aloe didn't do so well. but the one who won was a really nice variegated aloe arborescence. Mm. And grown to quite large size, so it was very nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked seeing the top plants who win all the champion ribbons and all the categories because they are pretty yeah. cool. Like there was it last year for the first year I entered? Somebody brought in a giant desert rose that was blooming.
Oh, wow.
It was like 25 years old, I think she said.
Wow.
It was a barb. And then I asked her about it the next year and she was like, I killed it. And I'm like, what? Oh no.
What?
What? How dare you? That was an awesome plant.
I don't know if I ever mentioned this story about desert rose. I learned the hard way that desert rose, the blooming is photo period sensitive because my friend's desert rose, you know, started growing buds. And I asked her, oh, can I, you know, borrow your plant to do a time lapse? And when I do time lapses, I try and keep the light on consistently,
yeah.
like 24/7. But I shone the light on it 24/7 and the camera caught the bud dying.
Oh no.
Oh no.
And then later I looked up that desert rose is photoperiod sensitive. And so just like Schlumberger, like, you know, Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus, those are also photoperiod sensitive. So you can't, when I time lapse those, I can't, you know, put the light on 24/7.
So really interesting thing happened to me. I have three Thanksgiving cactuses. Two are in just my normal like living room window. So they go through the photo transition and so they flower like normal, but I have a small yellow one that I had started in my grow tent setup because I was trying to give it, you know, a better starting point in life. It flowered on me having a consistent really? Temperature, temperature, humidity and light schedule. And I was like, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. What is your light schedule though?
Ooh, it's 12 hours, 12 hours on, 12 hours off.
Okay. What about the temperature? What's the temperature in the tent?
I will say we did recently go through a cold snap, so it probably got down to maybe 65 in there at the lowest, but I've always read that they need more like 50, 55 to,
So there's a, well, I mean, I think I copied that information into my article, but, there's an interesting link, like a link between flower triggering based on temperature or based on photoperiod.
Mm-hmm.
And when the temperature is down to 50 Fahrenheit, then the flowering will be triggered no matter what the photoperiod is.
Gotcha.
Mm.
And as you get higher in the temperature, then it requires more longer darkness time. Mm-hmm.
And it's something like 14 hours of darkness normally, right?
Well, if it's up to room temperature, which is 21 Celsius, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, 70? Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
72. Then, if it's 72 then temperature, then it needs 14 hours or more darkness.
Yeah.
So if it was in the 60s, then that's possible that could trigger if the photo period was 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Is that the one I'm looking at right there?
Yeah. And you can see there's more little buds starting to form on his
crazy
newest leaves. So
looking good.
Yeah. He's big enough now. He can go to a window and probably produce whole flowers for me for Easter.
He's graduated from the
cabinet.
The grow tent daycare.
Basically.
Daycare.
I call it a nursery.
I like to call it the plant hospital, but I like daycare
better.
Triage,
yeah.
Daycare yes, sounds more jovial. All right. Anything else that we haven't covered?
Oh, thanks.
Well, I guess what I want to say, like, when we introduce the episode as being like a framework, mm-hmm. I think maybe a better way to call it would be like a full checklist.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not quite as simple as a framework. Like, oh, you know, just these four things every time. Like, right. No, it's actually like here's what I consider to be the full picture of understanding, you know, what's wrong with your plant versus like not just what's wrong with it you think is wrong, but also like what all the different things that you're doing with it, including, you know, where you put it and all those kinds of things. And that then only when you have all of that information, then I can give, you know, meaningful and useful advice, right?
Yeah, and kind of like what we briefly touched on at the beginning of the episode is as a plant grower, be prepared to be able to answer these questions. Because I mean, in our Facebook groups, we see all the time people.
It's just, what's wrong with my plant? Here's a yellow leaf. And it's like, no information is given. And then everybody jumps in with their solutions.
Up humidity, repot asking questions. Fertilize it. Yeah. The generic three-point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, that's what's, I think, the root of all the confusion, right? Because everyone's going to tell you something different because they have to, because there's actually not enough information that's being presented to actually give you something useful out of it.
Mm-hmm. And I like how, you know, for me, plant growing is, it's kind of been an experiment. Like I've learned and I've grown. When you said earlier, when like you're growing the same plant as somebody else who's growing it well, and you have a question, you go and ask that person. I did a lot of that when I was starting off with new plants and stuff. And it was really helpful to talk to people who are doing it well and seeing what works for them and what doesn't. But like for now.
Well, and even better if you can go to the original grower. Like if you got the plant from a friend of yours and you can be like, hey, have you ever had this happen?
See, I'm just thinking about plants I bought at the nursery. Sure. And then there's somebody on the plant Instagram who I'm like, they're growing this plant and they just posted it. Let me ask them in the comments section. But like now that I've been growing for, let's see, my plant anniversary was in 2019. So that's, I'm going on my 6th year of plant growing. Yeah. Holy cow. What? I've had all these experiments and I've had, you know, my failures and my successes. So like I can look at, you know, your framework and have someone give me those answers and I can be like, well, it's probably this. So like for me, it's just, I have the knowledge from experience, but like, you know, if somebody's new to this, they're not going to know, oh, is it this, 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 or this? So it's nice that we're laying out all the possible options because then they can also explore those as well as provide information to help get some answers so that they can learn.
Cool. Plant of the week.
Should we?
Heck yeah.
I have mine picked out because I have a list now. My plant of the week is my goldfish plant.
Oh.
Yeah. He used to live at work and then I got laid off and work closed. So I brought him home and I gave him a big trim back because he was getting kind of leggy. And he finally, it took him a while, but he's got back into the whole swing of things and he's nice and full and bushy. And guess what? He's giving me goldfish.
Very nice.
Got a couple goldfish at the time and they're so cute. Anyway, I like the kind of goth dark glossy foliage, and he's in a black pot, so he's pretty sexy. So that's my plant of the week.
Nice.
I think I'm gonna do my. There's two Hoya that I like right now. My Wilbur Graves China that I got from Katie a little while ago.
Katie, our friend Katie.
Mm-hmm. He's just doing happy things, and I really like the splash and berry, or its splash on that one that it's producing.
Is that the left one or the middle one?
The second one in from the left on the back row.
Ooh, yeah. Those are some nice splashy oval shaped leaves. Mm-hmm. Cute.
Nice, nice. For me, it's going to be my Monstera Burl Marx Flame, which I bought several months ago. Obviously, a very, very small plant so that it wasn't outrageously priced. And just recently, I noticed that its most recent leaf, although it doesn't have any fenestrations, You know when the sun hits the leaf and you're looking from behind, you can see like the veining kind of stand out.
Yeah.
I noticed that this latest leaf has like quite a significantly more complex veining pattern than the older leaves. So it's like, I know it's getting there, you know?
Nice. My favorite plant to look at veins through the backside of the leaf is Regal Shield.
Yes.
So cool.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Up in Toronto, the market for Burl Marx Flame, are they down in the $100 to $50 range yet? Or are they still like $250?
Yeah, they're much more, within the $100, $200 for us, but obviously for a much small plant. I don't know if you were to get one with fenestrations that it would still be.
Oh, that would be probably outrageous.
Yeah.
But I mean, because, you know, people like us are like, well, I know that I can grow it, you know, in 2 or 3 years maybe. Guy, I know this one apparently takes a bit longer to get to the fenestration, but of all the plants that I've seen online, like I just count the number of leaves that it is from the, you know, juvenile to the fenestrated.
Yep.
And then I know approximately how long it's going to take. Yeah.
How many new leaves has it put out since you've got it?
It has put out 4 new leaves.
Mm-hmm. And would you say it's doing one leaf a month, one leaf every 2 months?
When I first got it, it was doing like once every 1.5 months, roughly.
Okay.
But just most recently, this one that was out took about 2 months.
That's not that bad.
No.
Between the time. But I know that winter for the juvenile, the juvenile leaves come out quicker, right, than the newer ones. I mean, sorry, than the more mature ones.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm curious if that guy's actually a slow grower or if the people who are growing it right now are just not that good at sizing them up very quickly. Well, they're not giving
I'm
them
enough
light.
I'm very tempted to get it into a moss pole.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just to see how much better it can grow. Mm-hmm. So I'm potentially thinking of just putting it right into a moss pole right away.
Sure.
Yeah. A lot of people complain about how slow ties are, and I don't find them to be slow at all. And like mine's putting out giant, giant leaves. So like, and it's been winter, so like it's still been kind of slow, but I think I've gotten 3 new leaves all winter, which... Mm. Like that's okay, but it'll definitely be putting out one a month when the summer comes around.
In the summer,
yeah,
nice. Yep. Do you keep it outside or in still in your tent?
I sell too many plants out of my home to feel comfortable putting them outside, so he stays inside and gets the whole south facing window to himself.
Okay,
just because has been theft. Yeah. In our community.
If someone shows up and steals him because they know where I live and they know I have him, like that would be one that I would be too sad to see get stolen. Mm-hmm. So he stays inside.
I see.
But if I were to take a cutting, Christine, I could do one inside and one outside, and then we could test it. cool. Well, congratulations, Plants of the Week. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And until next week, everybody, stay rough.
Bye-bye.
Bye.